Whether it's a marsh, a bog, a fen, or a swamp, we are surrounded by wetlands. And that's a good thing because they are a very critical habitat for many creatures, and they serve many important functions. They're natural filters for our watersheds, among other things. Larry Mueller here. Lucky to have a great organization like the Wisconsin Wetlands Association helping to educate you and me and the policymakers about the importance of wetlands while actively protecting them as well. With me today in the studio, Katie Belfus is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She's been a guest on the show many times, Katie.
It's always fun, Larry. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. Also with us, Tim Jacobson was one of the executive producers of the documentary film Mysteries of the Driftless, and that's going to be shown at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association conference next week. And Tim, thanks for spending time with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
I really appreciate it. Katie, we often get questions about exactly what constitutes a wetland area. Let's just start with that.
That's a great question, and I'm happy to have a simple answer in a threes. That doesn't all good things come in threes, right? The three things we talk about when we're thinking about what defines a wetland is the soils. There's a certain type of soils that develop under mm-hmm. wetland conditions. There's the water at or near the surface of the land for part or some of the year or all of the year, depending on your kind of wetland. And the third thing is the plants that grow there. There's a variety of plants that have special characteristics that allow them to live in wet conditions. Or sometimes it's just their feet that's wet. Sometimes it's their whole plant. So those three factors are what people look at to determine what a wetland is. And it's very important to think about that it's wetlands are not always wet.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing for some people to understand. A lot of wetlands are very seasonal with their wetness. They'll be wetter in the spring and summer and much drier in the fall. So it's not always whether there's standing water all the time, but yeah. Some of the time.
Yep, some of the time. Tim, one of the executive producers of the documentary Mysteries of the Driftless, and that's going to be shown, and we'll talk some more about the Wisconsin Wetlands Association conference, but that's going to be shown next week at the conference. Tim, how'd you get involved with the film?
Well, I was one of the creators. I was working as executive director of the Mississippi Valley Conservancy at the time. And my staff members and I would get to witness special places on the landscape that most people never get to see. You know, there's just so many spectacular vistas and mysterious caves, rare species, effigy mounds, all sorts of cool stuff. And it was our job to protect those features of the landscape. And it occurred to us that, you know, our landscape was worthy of having a film featuring it. The Driftless area, the unglaciated area of southwest Wisconsin, is really amazing. And we wanted to have a film that showcased that landscape and to help inspire people to care for the landscape and to protect it. And it was part of our environmental education mission at the Mississippi Valley Conservancy.
Oh, very interesting. So can you thumbnail kind of what the film covers? I have a picture, but...
Sure. Well, it's a film of science exploration and adventure. It was produced by the Mississippi Valley Conservancy and Untamed Science. One of the producers is actually from the Madison area, Dan Bertallon. And it features a team of explorers and scientists as they reveal the majesty and allure of the region known to geologists as the Driftless Area. They use a stunning combination of filmmaking and genuine adventure. Basically, they explore a number of mysteries of the landscape. They kayak the rivers, they fly in a small plane, and they hike through the bluffs of southwestern Wisconsin and across the Mississippi as well in this adventure documentary. And they address a number of questions or mysteries about the landscape. You know, why did the glaciers surround the Driftless area at various times over a million plus years but never directly touch it? You know, the whole issue of lost cultures that we have evidence from in the form of effigy mounds and cave art. And what kinds of rare species, particularly from the Pleistocene era, have continued to survive in the Driftless area because it remained unglaciated during the entire ice age. And then all the caves and sinkholes and a bizarre geological feature called an algific talus slope.
Ah.
So those are some of the mysteries we explore in the movie.
That sounds, it really sounds great. And Katie, of course, it's going to be shown at the...
It will. It's going to be the kickoff event at our annual Wetland Science Conference in La Crosse this year. And so Tuesday evening, February 18th, next week at 6:30 at the Radisson Hotel. And the event is open to the public. We invite people to come on down and enjoy the film and speak with some of the producers.
Free event?
It's a free event. We'll welcome a donation to help support our costs. But yes, certainly. Come on down.
Why? And well, before I ask the next question to you, Katie, I want to remind our listeners, if you have a question or comment, are you aware of the wetlands in your area? Do you know how to protect them? What concerns might you have about preserving wetlands? I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have a question about the conference. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and you can post a question or a comment there. The Driftless area, why is that such a, Katie, a key part of our state's wildlife, our wetland heritage?
Well, that's a great question, Larry, because a lot of people, when they think of the Driftless area, don't think that it's a very wetland-rich, because mostly we think about the uplands. We think about the beautiful bluffs and vistas. But all of that steep land drains down into some of our state's biggest rivers, the lower Wisconsin, Mississippi, Kickapoo. There's lots of great rivers down in there. And down in all of those low areas are extensive floodplain forests and other kinds of wetlands that are a really important part of the landscape in terms of, as you said at the beginning of the show, cleaning water and trapping sediments and protecting those river resources. So there are some really important wetlands in that region. In fact, the wetlands of the Upper Mississippi River have been designated an international wetlands of international importance under the Ramsar Convention. And one of the fun things will be happening at our conference is a group of scientists and conservationists are getting together to try to do the same nomination possibly for the lower Wisconsin Riverway because of its really important wetland resources and water resources.
Very cool. Tim, I know you've worked to get the film into schools. You see it as quite important for children to see.
Oh, yes. It's really remarkable in terms of the diversity of ages of people that seem intrigued by the film. We've had everyone from young children to retired people who have, come up to me after screenings, and they're very enthusiastic about the film. And we definitely would like to get it into schools all around the region, and that's something that we've just started to do. We've had a number of screenings at universities in the Driftless area, but we would like to get this into elementary schools and high schools. It's an adventure documentary, and it's about science, but we made sure that we used fun, and humor in the film to make it enjoyable for people of all ages. We were thrilled that it was broadcast on Wisconsin Public Television back in November. It is... We are expecting it to be rebroadcast a couple of times in Wisconsin and look forward to more opportunities to get it distributed.
Hmm. John in Richland Center has a question. Let's go to John. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for answering my phone call. I was wondering about the age of the Driftless region. I know the glaciers were like 15,000 years ago, the last one, but the age... In the landscape, was that cut out by the glacier runoff? Because I own some property out here where I have five springs. They're artesian wells, and they're about 100 feet lower than the ridgetops.
Hmm. Well, you know what? I bet you both Katie and Tim have some comments on it. Tim, let me turn to you first.
Sure, I can jump in. And I'm not a professional geologist, but... The landscape of the Driftless, the bedrock we have here, the dolomite and sandstone, is in some places about a half a billion years old. And, the landscape is much older than the Ice Age. This area, which was the Paleozoic Plateau, it was basically the seabed of a shallow tropical sea where all these marine animals, their shells left behind the material to form the rock strata here. And it has been carving away through erosion, over that period of time after the buildup of these layers. So, many, many millions of years. The the ice age, the last ice age that we're aware of, started somewhere around a million and a half years ago. And so the valleys, the river valley, the Mississippi and Wisconsin, I mean, those have been around since before the glaciers started moving in and surrounding the Driftless area. But certainly the whole region was impacted from the meltwaters of the glaciers. But a lot of people misunderstand and think that either, you know, that the rugged landscape of southwest Wisconsin was carved by glaciers, which it was not, or that these valleys exist because of the meltwaters of the glaciers. And in reality, this rugged topography predates that and continued to be created and incised, you know, these river valleys incised on the landscape during the course of the ice age.
Mm.
So it's, you know, the Mississippi River Valley, the bluffs are about 500 feet or so above the river right now. But geologists tell us that, you know, there's about, I think it's something in the neighborhood of 400 feet of sand and sediment at the bottom of the valley. Mm-hmm. So at one point in time, the river valley was significantly deeper. And, you know, when the meltwaters would have been rushing through the Mississippi and Wisconsin, it would have, you know, cleaned out a lot of sediment and whatnot. But as the water slowed, as the glaciers further receded, eventually the carrying capacity of the water diminishes and the sediment drops out and filled up the river valleys. And so they're not nearly as deep, the Mississippi River Valley in particular, not nearly as deep as it would have been at one point in prehistory.
Interesting. Mm. I just want to make one comment about the dolomite and the springs that John mentioned, and that's just to say that those kinds of rock formations allow for water, just as you see on your land, John, to come up in springs, and there can be some very unique and rare wetland types that are associated with that. So something to keep in mind if you've got springs on your property.
Absolutely.
Definitely. And I should also mention the film Mysteries of the Driftless also covers this karst topography with mm-hmm. sinkholes and springs and caves, and wow. We have an amazing underground water resource here in the Driftless area.
That's
and world-class trout streams.
World-class trout streams. Scott in Wisconsin Dells has a question that may relate to that. Scott, hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, I'm afraid that one of my favorite trout streams may be at risk from that mine they want to put up in Mellon. I fish it. I love fishing there, and I'm thinking that, you know, the runoff from the mine's going to pollute the stream, and I feel helpless in protecting it.
Well, perhaps you want to come to the conference on Thursday morning. Our executive director, Tracy Hames, is going to be giving a presentation about wetlands of the region of the Bad River up there. We're at the proposed mine site. He's been spending a lot of time with our partners in that neck of the woods trying to really understand and document the wetland resources of that area in order to provide the science that the decision makers need to have as they talk about this mine and whether or not it should go in and whether it's appropriate and what the impacts are going to be. So I can't speak to your specific favorite trout stream. Certainly, there will be vast impacts if that mine is built. But if you would like to learn about the resources of that area Thursday morning at the La Crosse Center at 8:30, we'll have a presentation about those wetland resources.
And thanks a lot for calling, Scott. Appreciate your call. We're visiting today with Katie Belfis, Outreach Program Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Tim Jacobson. Tim was one of the executive producers of the documentary film Mysteries of the Driftless. It's going to be shown at the Wetlands Association conference coming up next week. We'll learn some more about the conference and certainly keep talking about wetlands and the Driftless area here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. Hope you'll stay tuned because at 11:45, we're going to be talking with the author of The Sugar Maker's Companion, an integrated approach to producing syrup from maple trees, birch trees, and walnut trees. Right now, though, we're talking about our Wisconsin wetlands, wonderful wetlands with Katie Belfis and Tim Jacobson. Certainly inviting your questions and comments as we move along. Are you aware of wetlands in your area? Know how to protect them? Maybe you have some concerns you want to bring up? Number to call, 1-800 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Bill wondered if the conference sessions are going to be video recorded and available online later on.
Unfortunately, the answer is no. That's a branch of technology we haven't quite figured out yet, but it's something we know we need to look into.
Let's talk some more before we go back to the phones. Let's talk some more about what's going on at the conference itself.
Sure. Well, the majority of the audience of our conference is wetland professionals, folks who manage wetlands, some regulators, scientists, students. We get a lot of students at the conference. So it's an opportunity for that community to come together and share the latest information in our field. So we'll have talks about invasive species. We'll have talks about wetland restoration techniques. We'll have talks about, there's two special sessions, one on a technique that tries to identify and ascribe a value to the quality of wetlands so that you can compare them between each other and from, you know, over time as they may change. We'll have another symposium about restoration on the Upper Mississippi River and some very important work that's gone on there for that system. So a lot of different kinds of issues. We also take field trips, which some people think is crazy in February, but these are a hardy group of people and they like to get out and see wetlands and see the other projects that their colleagues are putting together. So we'll tromp right out there, rain, snow, or shine.
And one of my old pals, Kenny Solway.
Thank you for bringing that up, because that's one of my most favorite things that I'm looking forward to. And I listened to him on your show last fall, and that just made me even more happy that he's our banquet speaker this year. And our banquet is open to the public as well. It'll be Wednesday evening, February 19th, at the La Crosse Center Ballroom. The dinner's at 6:30 and Kenny's at 7:30. And boy, have I enjoyed just working with him over the phone to set this up. I'm very excited to have him. We do need to ask people to buy tickets in advance for that if they want to attend the banquet. Shall I?
And go ahead and give us some.
Sure. The number to call for tickets to the banquet is 608-785-6504. So if you'd like to attend that event.
So it's 608-785-6504.
That's correct.
And the online registration ends tonight, I think.
It does end tonight, but for the banquet, we can, if you make that phone call, we'll be able to. That's the online registration for the conference ends this evening, but the banquet tickets are still available.
Okay.
So I think even through Wednesday morning, they can add more tickets.
And I think we have a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can go there and take a look at what's on the agenda and all the information and take you right to where you can register.
And the whole conference is open to the public. It's just that we have these two events that we particularly mention because they're more accessible if you're not a scientist. But we'd welcome anybody who'd like to participate in the conference.
Lou Ray in Rosendale, I want to give you a chance now. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I love your shows. I own 125 acres of farmland that's going up for sale, and also adjacent to it are 110 acres of wetlands with two lovely ponds. Mm-hmm. And I'm very concerned about the lack of regulations and the inability of the DNR to really monitor these farms that are have a certain number of cattle that really have no regulations in terms of spreading manure, as I understand. Mm-hmm. And the farmers in my area and the farmers that are interested in purchasing this land are spreading manure very heavily all winter long, and I just can't see how that isn't going to run off into our wetlands, particularly since we have a downgrade leading to the wetlands.
Yeah.
It's a challenging question, and certainly agricultural runoff can pose a big problem to our wetlands and waterways, and the conditions under which they're applied need to be carefully monitored by the farmers. And it is challenging for a regulatory agency like DNR to be able to track that because there's such vast acreage in Wisconsin where that's an issue. So it's something that citizens like yourself can really help with to keep track of what's going on in your own community and to get your own community involved in thinking about those issues so that we're not just leaving it up to the state. They're a very, very important actor in that play, but the local communities also can have involvement in those kinds of issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are
go ahead, Tim. Sorry.
Oh, thanks. There are a number of ways that that people can, you know, help with the situation. In addition to supporting groups like the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, Midwest Environmental Advocates, and other groups that are working on wetland issues, private landowners do have some powerful tools available to them. We have more than 50 nonprofit land trusts in the state, and people who own farms and other rural land can utilize a tool called a conservation easement, which is kind of like imposing a form of self-regulation on a piece of land that will carry forward with the title of the land. So you indicated that you would be selling your land. And if you want to make sure that the land is taken care of the way you're taking care of it, you know, consider a conservation easement.
Mm-hmm. Yep, another good point. Thanks, Lou Ray, for calling. I appreciate your call very much. I want to give Debbie in Pewaukee a chance to join in. And by the way, you can join in too. Question or comment or experience to share. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Debbie in Pewaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello, yes. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that we enjoy so much the Bark River, especially along the area from the Oconomowoc area, from like, let's see, it's I think Upper Namabin, and then we go through the wetlands, through the cattails, and there's a small river, the Bark River. And what's interesting is it's so immaculately clean and clear. You can see the fish and the bluegills, perch, whatnot. And we just enjoy it. It's beautiful, the bird life. And you see red-winged blackbirds, and some of the herons come up. But also I'm a bit concerned because the lakes have a lot of the milfoil, the Eurasian milfoil, and that's a problem. And but we do enjoy kayaking. It's so gorgeous. In fact, I hated to tell people about it because it's so
keep it secret. Well, I love hearing.
But it is beautiful.
Yeah,
I love hearing stories of people getting out and really enjoying the wetlands that they have in their community, because that's one of the most important things to make sure that they're protected is fall in love with them, recognize all the beauty you can see there, and then you're more likely to encourage your community to do the right thing.
And kayaking is a great
super
way to do it, because, you know, you can get into areas that you wouldn't be able to in sort of a regular boat.
And one of my favorite things to do is to just paddle into some little quiet hidden spot and sit there.
Yeah,
and if you sit there for long enough, then birds and things that might have flown off or been quiet when you came in will start going back to their business, and you can see all kinds of cool stuff then.
Thanks, Deb.
Well, I also do a little snorkeling as well.
Oh, cool.
And it doesn't harm the environment. And, yeah, the fish are right there and beautiful.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Duane and Butternut, Wisconsin. We'll give you a chance next. Hi, Duane. Thank you for calling.
Oh, absolutely. Could you hear me all right?
Yes.
Oh, good. Listen, great program, by the way. I happen to have some wetlands, and this year I was kind of like entertaining the thought of opening that up just a little bit to put like some runways in there so it can breathe. I could take my family and walk through there, you know. I'm wondering if I would hurt anything by opening some of that up.
It's very dependent on the site. I definitely encourage people to figure out ways to enable them and their families to get out and enjoy the property that they own. Often the best place to put in a trail is not through the wetland itself because of the wet, soggy nature of the soils, but around a perimeter that on a little bit higher ground, and to keep the path pretty small so that you're not changing too much, mm-hmm. Just enough to get your family through. Does that help you with your question?
Well, yeah, I wasn't going to make something where you're going to take a vehicle through, other than possibly a four-wheeler. So it'd be more of a walking or wider than a walking path. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, and I just want to commend you for wanting to take that step in terms of knowing that you own a property and wanting to get out and enjoy it some more. Working with private landowners is something that our organization is trying to become more involved in. And when I'm not planning our conference, I'm helping to put together a handbook for private wetland landowners to give some more information about the different kinds of wetlands that we have here, some of the options that you might have to manage and protect your wetland, just to give folks like you some more information, basic information about wetlands and how they can be better stewards of them.
Is there a place or somebody, let's say, for example, Duane's in the Butternut area, is there are wetland members of the association or other experts that might be called on that he could call
sure.
on to?
Yeah, we welcome you to give us a call. And if we're out around the state at meetings, as we are a lot, and if you're nearby one of those meetings, we'd be happy to give a stop and say hello. And there's certainly other folks we can connect him with in the area as well. I'll also mention really quickly that we, a couple years ago, put out a book called The Wetland Gems of Wisconsin that is a nice book that details the locations in Wisconsin where you can go see some very high-quality wetlands. And so that's another way to see what other high-quality wetlands look like. If you're a manager of your own wetland and you want to get a sense of what other places look like, those are some really great sites.
And how people have actually made trails.
Yeah, you can see some examples of that. And there are lots of people getting into this, the business of providing the supplies in order to be able to do boardwalks, mostly for budgetary reasons. That's for places like nature centers, visitor centers, and the like that have bigger budgets than most of us homeowners. But but sometimes they might have some good ideas as well.
Mm-hmm. So there you go, Duane. Thank you. And get a hold of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. You can just
WisconsinWetlands.org is our website, or our phone number is 608-250-9971.
250-9971?
Yep.
And area code 608.
608.
608-250-9971. Duane, thanks a lot. I'm sure there were other people are jotting that number down as well. Greg in McGregor, Iowa. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, sir. Larry. I enjoy your show. My comment is about livestock near the wetlands and the refusal or the bypassing of the addressing of livestock and their impact on wetlands. When the other caller, the lady that had the land for sale, called in and spoke about her concerns, you need to say that, you know, there's good impact from livestock and there's bad impact from livestock. Your listeners were left with the impression that livestock and wetlands were not a good mix. And, you know, through the millions of years, livestock have been on the land and have helped enhance wetland areas. And as a livestock producer, with wetlands on my place, I think you need to address that they can coexist.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Greg, I really appreciate that comment because I didn't mean to say that I felt that somehow livestock was all bad. And I think that wetlands and farmers are actually a really, really important and valuable combination. I'm glad to hear from farmers like yourself who do see that the benefit of having wetlands on your property as part of your overall farming operation, because they can be a useful tool for managing lots of different issues that you face as a farmer on your property. So certainly point
right.
well taken.
Yeah.
And as an educational program, by failing to address those issues, your listeners were left with that impression.
Yeah, well, that's why I think I'm glad you called in because it gave Katie a chance to amend or not even amend.
Well, I think there's times when livestock do cause damage in wetlands, and there's a role for livestock on the landscape in conjunction with wetlands. So I don't think the two are mutually exclusive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Larry, if I can jump in.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
In the Driftless area, which includes the McGregor, Iowa area, it's very rugged terrain, and runoff from farms is a huge issue affecting water quality. And there's a big movement here. There's a movement called the Pasture Project, for example, which promotes having landowners utilizing pasturing of livestock as a way to move away from a lot of row crops on highly erodible areas of the landscape such that we can improve water quality. So we want to have people, farmers, be able to make a good living off the land, but we also have to look at, you know, the particulars of an area and what types of agriculture are best and how to do that. And managed grazing is one example of how farmers can utilize their property in this rugged terrain and still do a good job of protecting water quality.
Yeah, but very, very good points. Greg, thank you again for calling. Jim has something to add to this discussion as well in Fontana, so I want to go to him. Jim, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, another great show. Thank you. I'm on our local Land Conservancy Easement Committee, and we have some individual farmers who have chosen to put their land in easement. And so they the decision you negotiate with them for a management plan. So, for instance, in the situation where the woman who called, maybe she could, you know, land is pretty desirable right now and there's quite a demand, and she might be able to be picky about her buyers. And maybe the plan could include, you know, horizontal plowing of that hillside, or maybe growing alfalfa there, or pasturing animals instead of row crops. And it would just be all be part of the easement plan, so that you could have a win-win for agriculture and for the pond. It's not just the easements aren't just for beauty or for preserve, you know, native habitat forever. There's also an agricultural easement in that federal land conservancy program that is pretty flexible in terms of how the two parties negotiate easement.
Great point.
Very good points. Thank you, Jim, very much for calling. Appreciate it very much. And we had Gary in Berlin who actually called in to recommend the DNR publication, which is titled The Wetland Restoration Handbook for Wisconsin Landowners. Again, it's the Wetland Restoration Handbook for Wisconsin Landowners. We can probably put a link up on our Facebook page for that, too.
And that's a publication that we actually originally published, and then we collaborated with the Department of Natural Resources to republish that so that we're able to offer it for free to any landowner who'd like. So it's a great publication, lots of really useful information in there.
And actually, as an aside, Gary called from his sturgeon shack, so he had to go back to watching the hole. thank you, Gary. Terry in Watertown, hi.
Hi. My question concerns tiling of agricultural fields. They tile all these fields. The tiles are only a foot or two underground. When the rainwater falls, it just rushes down through there into the ditch, into the river, etc. And it doesn't really clear itself out into the aquifer or help our water table, in my mind. It seems like it runs off so fast that we're going to lose
a lot. Okay.
Yeah, well, and the purpose of those tiles, of course, was to help a farmer make a particular field that was difficult to farm because it was wet, drier. And so in some, there was a big, big push to install tiles to make as much farmland as possible. We're learning now that a lot of those fields, it's more work than benefit. You put in a lot of time and money and effort putting those tiles in, and it's still just really hard to farm some of those fields. And so there's many farmers who are saying, look, this is not worth my money and my time. Let's see what I can do. And there's a number of government programs, including the Wetlands Reserve Program that's run through the Natural Resources Conservation Service, that actually provide some incentive payments to farmers to take that marginal wet farmland out of production and restore wetlands to those properties. And we're collaborating with that organ with the NRCS to help those landowners and encourage more folks to do that, so that we do get, as you pointed out, Terry, that we get that water soaking into the ground, recharging the aquifers, recharging groundwater, rather than racing off and polluting streams and rivers and lakes.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, Terry. Rich in St. Germain. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I was just going to tell you, when I was a kid growing up down in Illinois, there was a park, Pilcher Park in Joliet, and there was an artesian well there, a big cement structure they built with the fountain and all the little drinking fountains around the side, and they always said, you know, it flowed naturally, and they said that water came down all the way from Wisconsin. and my brother just told me a couple years, you know, a few years back, that now they had to put an electric pump on there to keep the water flowing. And, you know, yeah. I think it's important to save our wetlands up here and not, you know, even blowing up the beaver dams and, you know, sending all the water ground, you know, on you know, south without it soaking into the ground. And then I thought that was pretty amazing, you know.
Comment from you, Katie?
I think groundwater is under the ground, right? So we think that it's always going to be there. And we are blessed in Wisconsin with very rich water resources. But we need to take care of them, because even though we have a seeming lot of water now, we need to protect that for the future. And maintaining wetlands is one strategy. And letting Mother Nature take care of that business for us is the easiest way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go back to the conference and also to the film again. Katie, let's go kind of review what's going on with your conference.
Sure. Well, we start the conference Tuesday evening with the Mysteries of the Driftless
this
film.
This is next week.
This is next week, yep, Tuesday evening, the 18th. So the 6:30 p.m. is when that film is being shown at the Radisson Hotel. And then the conference itself convenes the following morning, Wednesday morning, the 19th, at the La Crosse Center right next door, and goes on for a day and a half of sessions, indoor sessions. And then in the afternoon of Thursday, we have field trips and various working groups, opportunities for folks to get together and talk about specific issues. The banquet is the Wednesday evening in between those 2 days.
And the field trips, what kind of...
The field trips, yeah. We've got three great field trips. The La Crosse River, La Crosse Marsh is one of the sites. And then a couple of other Goose Island Restoration Project and the Root River Tract Restoration Project, which are other sort of Mississippi area, La Crosse area wetlands. And Tim knows those places better than me, so maybe he wants to make one quick comment.
Yeah, Tim?
Well, the La Crosse Marsh is just wonderful. I lived in La Crosse for more than 20 years, and... The city itself is divided in north and south by this huge marsh, and it's something that the citizens of the area really cherish. The DOT has tried for a couple of decades now to run a big new highway through the marsh, and the citizens in a referendum several years back voted overwhelmingly to not allow a road there because they value their marsh. There's wonderful hiking trails. Great wildlife observation opportunities. It's such a peaceful place to go for walking, bird watching, hiking, riding a bike, and we've got, you know, the Myrick Park right there next to the marsh. So it's just a wonderful resource for La Crosse, and very glad that there'll be a tour of it.
Well, and Tim, it's going to be real. I know it's going to be great for people to see your film, documentary, Mysteries of the Driftless, which is going to be shown at the conference. And can people get somehow rent or get copies of that to view on their own?
Oh, definitely. The Mississippi Valley Conservancy sells DVDs of Mysteries of the Driftless, so people can call up MVC. The number there is 608-784-3606 and select extension 1 for Nancy, and she can help you out with a DVD. We've distributed nearly 1,000 copies of the DVD so far, and we'd love to get it into schools and public libraries all around the region.
So it's 608-784-3606. Well, Tim, Katie, thank you so much. It's been great. I hope you have a wonderful conference, and I hope you get a big turnout.
Thanks so much. We're really looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing you, Tim.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Larry.
Yep, take care. Katie Balfus is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Tim Jacobson produced this wonderful film called Mysteries of the Driftless. It's going to be shown at the conference next week, but you can also get your own copy. Wetlands are really... a wonderful part of our Wisconsin landscape. Our trees are as well. And coming up next, we'll visit with the author of the book, The Sugarmaker's Companion. We're going to learn how to actually put those trees to work. So I hope you'll stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.